Hey, everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, where each week we interview a member of the sports media about their job and their process. My producer is Lou Pellegrino. This week, a special podcast, not your traditional Q&A. We are bringing back James Andrew Miller, the fine author of the CAA oral history, the ESPN oral history, as well as the Saturday Night Live oral history, a multiple-time New York Times bestselling author. He has been on this podcast before. Nobody more sourced at ESPN than James Andrew Miller, so it's always fun to sort of nerd out and do an hour of sports talk with him. One of the topics we go very, very deep on are the upcoming ESPN layoffs. Not a happy topic to talk about, but one that is happening. The company is going to be laying off a number of front-facing people from now till June. And I asked Jim Miller how he sees these layoffs impacting ESPN.
I've talked to a lot of people there, and the previous one was very difficult, not only in terms of the sheer number, 300, but there were people that had worked there for years and years and years. I mean, in some cases, decades. So it was really tough. These on-air people, though, are going to be missed. I think the way that I've heard it, and I've kind of run the numbers on it, I think we're looking at between 40 and 50 people.
We'll also talk about where Jim sees Bill Simmons now after the conclusion of his HBO show. So I think you're really going to enjoy this, especially if you're kind of a sports media nerd like we are. It's an hour plus of sports media conversation with author James Andrew Miller. All right, and as promised, we bring on James Andrew Miller for another return to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, and what I hope will be an enjoyable hour of sports media nerd talk. Jim Miller, welcome back to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Jim, let's start right away on a topic that is not fun to talk about at all. Any of us in the media business, and I guess I shouldn't say any, but I'll personalize it to myself. If you've worked long enough in sports media, you have probably experienced or you've been at a place that has had layoffs. We have had multiple rounds of layoffs at Sports Illustrated. It is just an incredibly horrible experience to see colleagues leave. Obviously, for the colleagues who leave, it's the worst experience of all, but it absolutely is. It's awful. It's demoralizing. It is the way of media today, but it never gets pleasant isn't even the right word. It's always just a shitty experience. I don't want to not curse because that's what it feels like. So Jim, let's get to one of the stories that is pretty prominent right now, and that is ESPN currently embarking on significant layoffs, with the emphasis being on those in front of the camera. A couple weeks ago, that was something I reported. Based on my reporting, the numbers will be in the tens of millions in terms of the budget that has to be cut, directed from Disney. You are, again, someone who's written the book on ESPN. You're probably sourced better at that place than anybody on earth. How much can you talk about what you know in terms of the upcoming layoffs?
Well, first, in regard to your opening comment on it, I mean, layoffs are horrible. And I think at a place like ESPN, they are, it's not that it's particularly horrible, because obviously when you lose your job and when you see colleagues go at any place, it's difficult. But for many, many years, ESPN was this place that was just about unbridled growth and expansion and expansion. And there's a new building being built and the campus is getting bigger and there's yet another network and everything else. So if you think back to a couple of years ago when 300 people were laid off, that was such a disruption to the culture. I mean, not only to the people that left, but to their colleagues.
Right.
And it was kind of an earthquake and a significant one at that, because what it did was, it showed everyone within the entire ESPN ecosystem that the rules were changing, that they were no longer, you know, on terra firma like they used to be. And it wasn't about, you know, just more and more and more and more. And I think that this one is in some ways not as difficult, because this is on air and you're not, I think I've talked to a lot of people there, and the previous one was very difficult, not only in terms of the sheer number, 300, but there were people that had worked there for years and years and years. I mean, in some cases decades. So it was really tough. These on-air people, though, are going to be missed. I think the way that I've heard it, and I've kind of run the numbers on it, I think we're looking at between 40 and 50 people. Hmm. The numbers that were some people reported about $80, $90 million, just, you know, kind of ridiculous by a factor probably of three. But I think if you think about it in terms of 40 to 50, I think that's a safe range based on what I've been talking to people about. And look, there's a lot of uncertainty about who it's going to be and why. Remember, this is not quantum physics, so it's not an exact equation. You know, the thing that I've been able to do is kind of just sit down and just follow the money a little bit. You know, so I don't know if you're up for this, but let's just talk about it theoretically, all right? In terms of a possible schedule. If you look at some of the deals they've made, so you look, you know, into the future a little bit about what ESPN is going to look like. We can talk about ESPN too if you want later, but you know, you're probably going to see at 6 a.m. a re-air of Neil and Stan from the night before. And then at 7 to 10, you're going to have the Greeny Show. I think it's going to be 3 hours. I think it's not going to be a sports center. And so you got one guy there. And, you know, they're paying him a nice chunk of money. 10 to 12, probably be First Take. And then given the deals they made with Bomani and Pablo Torre, probably I would imagine 12 to 1, they would have their show. 1 to 5 would be their, you know, the normal kind of coverage that they're doing, then Around the Horn and PTI. 6 o'clock, they're not going to give up on Jamel and Michael Smith. That's, you know, they feel good about that. You'll have live sports, you know, in the evening. 11 o'clock Sports Center, then Scott Van Pelt, then, you know, Neil and Stan. So the question becomes, if you're ESPN talent and you're looking, I mean, maybe I'm off, maybe I'm not, but you're looking at a schedule that's something like that, based on the commitments that they've made, if you're not on that, then you're starting to feel a little shaky. That's not to say that everyone else is gone, but I think those are the people that can take a deep breath, and those are the people that should, you know, feel immune. It's interesting because I've heard that the Trey Wingo-Golic pairing, which is kind of like the replacement of Mike and Mike, is not even going to get a simulcast on ESPN2. And as of, let's say, first thing this morning, the Golic deal isn't even made.
Right.
They're being pretty aggressive. And, you know, that's another thing that's going on right now for the last several weeks. If you're an agent and you're negotiating for some of this talent, like, how aggressive can you really be knowing the fact that they're like, looking for names? You know, I know that the Steve Levy deal was kind of difficult, and I don't think it's even done, but I think that's going to get done. And he certainly, you know, one would hope he certainly stays within the fold. But it's a tricky time because, you know, at some point they could just say, yeah, well, we can't make this deal. So, you know, and then they hang up the phone and they go into a room and add that person to the list.
All right. There's a lot to, there's a lot to unpack in what you just said. So I'll try to take a couple different things there. One, what's very clear, and I think, you know, similar sources have said to me that if you are part of the SportsCenter unit right now, but not one of the SportsCenter talents where management has truly tapped on the shoulder and given the golden ticket to, that would be, I mean, if I was one of those people, I would be talking to my agent and my representation just to get a sense of, okay, where am I in terms of how management thinks of me. If the schedule goes to close to as you have it, you nailed it on the head. If you're not part of that grouping, you could be in trouble. I have heard, Jim, one of the things that in terms of these layoffs is that they are open to people renegotiating current contracts to bring down what they believe were inflated salary contracts that were made, you know, a couple years ago when things were going really well. But that's very hard for talent to do, Jim. I would think you would, you know, as you know, in that you're, if you're used to a certain lifestyle, to take a 40% cut is tough. Now, if you don't think there's anything else in the market, maybe you take it. But have you heard similar in that they are, ESPN management, at least in some places, is looking to they'd be amenable to high salaried talent renegotiating existing contracts and bringing them down.
It might save you. I mean, here's the calculus, though. You got to, like, you got all of a sudden, first of all, you got to decide whether or not you're willing to do that and adjust your lifestyle or whatever. Second of all, you have that preemptive call with your agent saying, listen, before we do that, can you find out, is there anybody out there that will take me closer to what I'm making now?
Right.
And, you know, this is not a particular, despite the fact that, let's say, you know, the Tirico deal at NBC and Jamie Horowitz's purchases, Skip and
Colin Cowherd.
And Colin, which were big ticket items. You know, there's not a lot of money out there and there's not a lot of product to associate with it. I mean, a lot of slots are filled.
Right.
So, if you're making, you know, there are people at ESPN making between 1, 5, and 3 who, you know, the money's not on the screen, as George Lucas used to say. And so, you know, who's going to pick you up in that price range?
It's a good,
You know, it's a difficult marketplace. So then you do say then, well, listen, you know, what's it going to take? What kind of cut is it going to take for my client to not be let go? There are a lot of people, I've actually talked to several, you know, talent who said, look, at this point in my life, Jim, I'd rather just be working and be on the air and, you know, going to work every day and being around my colleagues than not working and
right.
having some, you know, big salary, which I may never be able to match anyway.
Yeah, that's interesting. One thing, this is not something that you do a lot of. It is something that that I write a lot about. And in terms of looking at this schedule or a potential schedule, I honestly do not know how you feel about this, so I will ask you. And you're a management guy, so you'll probably say this is a great idea. So
management guy.
Being that I'm the iconoclast here.
Okay.
So Mike Greenberg, you know, is clearly going to get his own show. There's no argument there. The question is, does it air in New York City? Is it more of a sports center? Is it more of like a talk show? Is it a hybrid? Whatever it is. This is your reporting in terms of his salary. They're not paying him the salary that you reported to stick on Mike and Mike. As I reported, this has been in the works for a while. Mike Greenberg wants to, at his station in life, see if there's anything else for him beyond the Mike and Mike brand. Here's what I would say, Jim. In a competitive marketplace, which morning television is, you are not only competing against other morning shows that exist on the NFL Network, it's talking sports now, that will exist on Fox Sports 1 or wherever else. You are competing against Today, CBS, their morning show, the Good Morning America, not to mention the fact that we are in divisive political times and so many people are now watching the Morning Joes and the CNNs and Fox and Friends. I see no way that Mike Greenberg is getting ratings in this slot. No disrespect to him. I can't see. He's not someone who's going to bring, in my opinion, audience over from any of these other places to watch this show. So now, that's my long preamble, Jim. If you're ESPN management, what is your calculus here to think that this kind of show is going to somehow make a ton of money in the morning?
Because what they're doing is basically treating it like late night television. They've decided that Mike Greenberg is a personality just like Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel, or Stephen Colbert, and you're going to want to spend time with them. I doubt if it's going to be a SportsCenter type show, because then it's its value proposition, it's kind of a whole thing is just becomes homogenized. They want to come up with something that is going, you're going to want to spend time with Greeny, and you're going to want to spend time watching him do things that other people aren't doing. And I think they've made a big bet on that, and I think it's going to probably be a 3-hour show.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, but there is no metric other than Mike Greenberg's success on radio that would say, and this again, I think Mike Greenberg's a talent. I'm not knocking him here, but there's no metric that I can see that would indicate that will be a successful television show.
I know, but Richard, you're talking. Look, there's no, look, Jimmy Fallon, you know, when I interviewed him for the second SNL book, he was talking about his, you know, he couldn't get arrested. His movie career had failed. Nobody was doing anything. And, you know, Lorne Michaels called him up and said, listen, I think you should give this a shot. And he's like, could anybody, you know, would anybody watch me? I mean, when George Clooney was cast on ER, it was like his, you know, 700th pilot. I mean, that's the history of television. There's no track record, you know, per se. But
Fallon had done, like, I mean, hadn't Fallon done Fever Pitch? He had, if nothing else, he had fronted some films that were at least moderately successful, no?
No.
No.
I mean, let's put it this way. They were disappointing to the studios, and I think Jimmy would be the first one to say they were disappointing to him. I mean, he was concerned.
Okay.
You know, I mean, if he had had a great, and I don't think this, I don't mean this disrespectfully, I think this is coming from him.
Right.
You know, that I think if he had had a unbelievable movie career, he would be doing what Will Ferrell has been doing then. You know, not that having his own show is like, you know, a second choice or a second rated kind of thing. But I think that Lorne mentioned the idea to him at a time of vulnerability and uncertainty and when he wasn't getting a lot of offers. The whole point was, I mean, look, when Tina Fey decided to do Weekend Update, when Lorne gave her Weekend Update, there wasn't anything to suggest that. She had been in the writer's room. So, I mean, you know, she had done sketch comedy before and everything else, but there are no guarantees. So,
no, I get it. I you make a compelling argument in terms of why this exists. And again, I'm not trying to, like, sort of knock on Greenberg here. I just think there's enough data points to make clear that I mean, the Greenberg Golic simulcast only has a finite number of viewers every day, a 250,000, with
which
a ton
why
of
you won't see the Trey Wingo Golic simulcast,
right? Which is, you know, a ton of publicity. So I mean, listen, I'm not saying you are saying it's going to be successful. Maybe the ESPN management theory here will turn out to be what you want. Mike Greenberg obviously appeals, I think, to a certain brand of people who like he's likable. You know, I think he probably appeals. I don't want to stereotype. I feels like he would appeal to like the suburban dad group, but I don't see that group watching TV from 7 to 10.
Oh, listen, he's climbing Everest on a cold day in his shorts. There's no doubt about it. But you know, they're at a point now in terms of programming and coming up with this. Look what they did with the 6 o'clock Sports Center. Are you looking at the promos for it? Because
I'm not only looking at the promos. I see the ratings every day.
But I'm just saying on the screen, they says sports, movies,
culture,
like,
right?
Like
right.
They're trying to, like, you know, be like a buffet there. They're trying to do everything they can. This is a time of tremendous experimentation,
right?
You know, at ESPN, there's not a lot of known certainties. The only certainty is that Burbank has said, stop spending money like a drunken sailor. We need to figure this out. We're losing households. And by the way, you better start saving up for 2020 when some of these rates come up.
Right.
Because, you know, the NFL deal is coming up and, you know, pretty soon there'll be some other deals. We're in a kind of a lull right now, but pretty soon there's going to be some really big deals. And so they got to start planning for that.
No, I understand that. I would say this. I like Jemele Hill a lot. I've known her for a long time. We're sort of professionally friendly. I like her. I'd like to see her have success. I would say the same thing, Jim, honestly, about the 6 p.m. time slot. I don't think Michael Smith and Jemele Hill have any chance of improving the ratings there. I think if they can maintain the ratings or maybe even be, you know, a -3, a -4%, I think that's a win. I think they have a similar problem, in my opinion, that Mike Greenberg has. That is just a hard slot for sports television to win, given the amount of people who are paying attention to cable news in the Trump era.
Right. Now, here's the only thing, though. I have started to hear from some people. I mean, with this political coverage, I think there's a possibility that we may hit diminishing marginal returns with those viewers, that people are people are getting so depressed and so pissed off about it that they may start to flock to sports as an escape, as a coping mechanism. Because I know that there's a level of exhaustion that is starting to set in. I mean, every day is so eventful. Every single week, I mean, you look back on the week and you think, wait a second, all this happened in 1 week? I mean, and it's happened every week since January 20th, whether you're a Republican or Democrat or whatever. But,
right.
you know, there is the possibility, and I know that people at ESPN are rooting for it, where, you know, they're just going to say, look, we're offering escapist entertainment and, you know, the real world and real results and, you know, come join us instead of watching what the latest horror show is from DC.
Right, but here's the counter to that. First of all, I don't agree with you. I think cable news is going to continue to go up. That would be my argument.
I mean, you know, if you're betting, that's certainly what would happen.
Right.
But it doesn't mean that people in sports can't dream.
No, I agree with you. But here's the deal: the Jemele Hill and Michael Smith Sports Center. What do they get tagged at from other people in the media who are competing against them more than anything? They get tagged as they are political, they are talking too much social issues. So that's interesting you say that if ESPN is presenting, you know, sort of us, or, you know, ESPN presenting itself as a escapism option, there's a whole contingent out there. Now, again, I think that a lot of the people who are floating that out there are sort of self-serving, but there's a contingent out there that are saying ESPN has become nothing more than a social justice warrior network, and Jemele and Michael are front and center on that line.
Yeah, I don't think they're using six as an example of that. I think they're using more like SportsCenter.
I disagree with you on that. I think they're using the six as much as anything. You really don't think so? That's interesting to me.
Well, the only problem is that because there is that political subtext to the six, that one doesn't carry as much of an escapism as you know, some of the other shows. I mean, that was one of the things that people were upset about with the Kaepernick thing, which is when people turn on an NFL game, they want to be totally free from politics,
right.
Whether that's right or wrong.
The other thing that you mentioned in the sort of the large-scale schedule, if it happens, I'm also not convinced, no disrespect to these guys too, both talented. I don't think a Pablo Torre, Bomani Jones show in the middle of the day on ESPN is going to hit either. I think that, again, is the same sort of problem. I think you're asking too much to draw viewers away from the cable news universe, not to mention the fact that they have specific POVs. I think that are progressive is probably how I would frame it politically. And I don't know if that show sort of hits it out of the park. In the same way, if you look on the other side, it's Fox Sports 1. What's Colin Cowherd simulcast topping out at? It's only topping out basically at 100,000, 110,000 or so. I don't know if – now ESPN's numbers will be better because it's ESPN, but I'm not sure I see that show as a big hit either.
Well, you know, it's – look, I think you're probably right. The only question becomes, how do they define success? Because if
Correct.
You're not paying like tons and tons of money and, you know, it becomes – quote unquote, relatively cheap
right.
to program the talent and, you know, whatever is attached to it production wise from 12 to 1, then you don't need a big number. You know, I mean, look,
excellent point.
I mean, ESPN is, it's all about 8,760 hours, right?
Right.
So you got to throw stuff at the screen anyway. It's just a question of, remember, referencing back to your introduction here about several years ago when Fox Sports was really starting up, when Fox Sports 1 was really starting up, and the cord cutting wasn't, you know, really as big a part of the equation as it is now. And they were spending some real money on deals. In fact, there was one deal that I think percentage-wise, I might go on a limb and say that I think it was the largest percentage increase of any talent in the history of ESPN. I can't think of another one where somebody was making X and then all of a sudden their next contract they were making Y.
Right.
And, you know, that's a little, you can guess who that is, but.
You're not going to give us that information is what you're telling me.
Okay, go ahead. Take a guess.
I don't want to guess. If you're going to throw it out there, give it up.
I think, let's put it this way. I think Sage Steele did an amazing job.
Can we say this though? The winner, so if there is a winner, at least in the latest universe, it is your beloved CAA, who has figured out a way, even with cost cutting, to cut some deals for people that is just break the bank deals, even as things are cut. Obviously, Skip Bayless, CAA guy, right? Stephen A. Smith, CAA guy. Mike Greenberg, CAA guy. Jemele Hill and Michael Smith, CAAers. Not all part of the same agent, although one agent there does have a lot of them. But they, you know, that place, if nothing else, and you again wrote the book on them, they have been able to figure out a way to still get a lot of their big talent people paid in an era where we're starting to see cost cuts, correct or no?
Yeah, I think they're, look, I would argue with the word beloved. You can ask Richard Lovett if he thinks I love CA, but that's beside the point. I think that they do, in many cases, they've done a very good job representing their, you know, their
high
clients.
End. Right, high-end guys.
But, you know, look, there's other people at other places, I mean, that are very effective as well.
Yeah.
I think there are some places, though, that have not figured out how ESPN makes its decision money-wise. And I think that when you try and play hardball with ESPN, if you really don't have the goods and if you really don't understand what's motivating them and what kind of leeway you have, they'll turn on you. And that happened a couple of times. They'll turn on you hard.
Hmm. Well, CAA is already running FS1, so now they're just trying to run ESPN. So this is basically how it. I will say this, though, in all seriousness, you do listen, a lot of good agents out there. If management, they've been on this show before, this podcast before. Sandy Montag has some big dogs with Tirico and Sean McDonough. Who else have we mentioned? Max Entertainment. Who else do you deal with?
Josh Pyatt.
Josh Pyatt. WME. We didn't even mention the WME dudes.
I mean, Josh Pyatt is, you know, the varsity.
Josh Pyatt has Aaron Andrews or no? Am I right about that?
Yeah, I think so.
And we haven't mentioned, who's Simmons' agent? Baby Doll. What's that guy's first name?
Baby Doll. He's affiliated with WME. I mean, how can you?
I don't deal with that. You're more in this. You're a buddy of Bill Simmons's in terms of his agency. I don't deal with the Baby Doll guy.
Listen, he is unbelievable. He's got Kimball. He's got an unbelievable.
James Dixon. That's his name. Right now, I remember James Dixon. James Baby. Yeah. Look, this is getting way too inside, but yeah, James Dixon is Bill Simmons' agent. Not to mention, he is. Is he Kimmel's agent too? And
yep.
And Adam Carolla and a lot of comics, right?
Yep, he's got a great slate.
The
only reason we're talking about them, by the way, is because in this fragile world, in this uncertain world, these agents are, you know, the talent is more dependent on them than ever. And, you know, what Sandy Montag pulled off with Tirico at NBC and taking him out of ESPN.
Yeah, and setting up McDonough.
I mean, this is, this is not easy stuff. It's pretty complex and the stakes are pretty high. You know, a couple years ago when ESPN foolishly announced that Mike and Mike were moving to New York to do their show out in New York, and P.S., they hadn't signed new contracts, they held them up. It was about $7 million each. Because they thought they had him over a barrel, and it turned out that ESPN said screw it. So you got to be careful.
$7 million. I mean, no offense, but that's insane. I mean, whatever. I realized money was floating.
I believe Mr. Greenberg chose different representation. After
yes,
that.
He did, and it ended up getting close, according to your reporting, $6.5 million.
No one's told me that I have to issue a correction. So
I know whenever I report a salary, and I never hear back from anybody. It's pretty. I've never had to issue a correction on my Bayless salary either.
Hey, let me ask you a question, though, in terms of you reporting.
I want to ask about Bill Simmons, though, because there was a question that came in that said Jim Miller seemed to be Bill Simmons' biggest pumper, which I don't disagree with. But now you should ask your question.
Oh, I was just thinking in tune when you were saying you're reporting. Is there? Do you have any rules about when you don't tweet?
Like what don't I tweet?
No, about like times of day or like do you have... I mean, I know your father. I mean, do you have certain blackout periods that you've established for yourself?
Yes, of course. So the blackout period is when I come home and, you got to put the kids to bed, change the diapers, give them milk, and, get a sense of what's been going on.
And then no matter what.
And in the morning, too. You know, again, like I'm not really sleeping that much because when you have toddler twins, you just don't do that. So the morning, too. Yeah, basically... The best what I have this is like a Rovell conversation. I think, in my opinion, the best times to tweet are if you're in the sports world are between 8 and 12 at night when people are watching sports and they're on their second screen playing around with Twitter, or 10 a.m. Eastern to like 1 p.m. Eastern when people are getting in to work on the West Coast and people have sort of set in on the East Coast and they want maybe a little bit of a diversion from their work day. That's what I found. If you
I follow you, obviously, I always have, and I just thought, I guess it was about a year and a half ago, all of a sudden I saw you, sorry to use a business school expression, vertically integrating. I, all of a sudden you're like talking about politics and other things, and I'm thinking to myself,
well, we had a big thing going on in this country, Jim. I know you're, you know, you're smarter than me. You're politically agnostic on Twitter because you want, you're like Jordan. Everybody buys sneakers, right? I had to make a decision along the way.
No. I'm not disputing it. I'm just, the rest of my question was, I just thought to myself, like, how on earth is there going to be enough time to start, like, doing basically everything?
No, somehow
you've managed to do it, but.
Stop. You're stroking me. Listen. It's not that. Is it really? I mean, you're on Twitter. How hard is it to just tweet something that you're like, hey, this is an interesting story, colon, tweet? It's only like a 4-second commitment, right?
So you didn't have like in your mind, there wasn't like a Rubicon where you thought, am I going to go outside sports now as a career move, as a branding move, or anything like that?
We'll see what happens with Time Inc. sell. No, it wasn't an intentional decision. I've always been someone who's fascinated by politics. It was a major of mine in college. And so given that 2016 was the most divisive and troubling election of my lifetime, I just decided to be a little more active on
Twitter.
But
like we talk about Jamel and Michael and subtext there.
Which they are very active on. I mean, Jamel is very politically active on Twitter.
I know, but has SI ever said to you, watch some of your tweets?
The only once in the last 5 years that they, my boss said, I'm not going to tell you not to do anything, but this one sort of came dangerously close to the line, and I agreed with him. So I've tried to hear those words and be smart. I have no doubt that probably there are times I've, I don't think I've ever sort of gone over the line. They're just going to be things that I might tweet out, stories that are obviously going to be bothersome perhaps to a group of people if you don't agree with the political ideology of the story.
I mean, you make it pretty apparent where you are in terms of like orthodoxies and stuff. So.
Well, my orthodoxy, I'm very clear. I'm certainly not a Donald Trump supporter. I never was a flag waver for Hillary Clinton at all. But, you know, I'm a New Yorker for a long, long time, and I've seen Donald Trump up close for decades. So I wanted to be honest with my audience and the people who follow me on Twitter, and I certainly have done that with the current president. Yeah.
So, and do people stop following you because they don't agree with you politically?
No doubt they have, but I think others have followed. Let's put it this way. My Twitter count has never gone down, but there's no doubt that there are some people who probably stopped following me because they wanted sports or my feed to be an escapism. I absolutely totally respect that, by the way. I think that's a legit reason to unfollow anybody. And, you know, it'd be the same way for people who might unfollow me because they're tired of seeing Skip Bayless ratings. I got no problems, and I respect that.
And you follow people politically that are not in sync with your views?
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I follow some people who work for the Federalist. I follow a number of National Review writers. But I'm, you know, there's a lot of views that I have are both centrist and might even lean right. So I think one thing that's always dangerous in politics is to generalize people as sort of you are only this or you are only that. I will say after the election, I absolutely started following more people who had a different viewpoint than mine just because I think that's made me a smarter consumer. All right, Jim, listen, we're moving on from me. This is the most boring part of the podcast. What do you think of the Walt Disney Company extending Bob Iger's contract to July of 2019? What does that mean for ESPN?
It's good news or bad news. I mean, look, it's good news for Disney shareholders because, Bob Iger is literally one of the great media executives of our times. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. This does not make me a management guy. Just follow the numbers. Just talk about the way he's managed that company and what he's done with that company, shareholder return, the kind of diversification and the company's image. So I think it's in many ways when Tom Staggs left, it was a no-brainer to think that Bob would be staying. Just the idea of doing a search and having the board go through the process of finding a replacement, I mean, that takes time. In fact, when you look back on it, one of the reasons when Eisner was leaving, that the whole mess with ESPN and ABC about Sunday night and Monday night football was because they were in the middle of deciding who was going to replace Eisner. And, so Bob was not, I don't think he was in, you know, the best position to, do what he wanted to do because, I mean, I remember there was one weekend when they were talking to Meg Whitman about possibly running Disney. So you can't really make such a huge decision when that's going on. So I think it's comforting in the sense that you have somebody, if you're at ESPN, you have somebody who's running the parent company who understands what you're doing, understands the history of your company, and understands the financial challenges. The downside or the tough side could be that Bob says, well, there's three things he could say that could make it tough. One is, look, we've been talking about this for years. Where's the turnaround? Where does it look like? Where are we going to, I mean, you know, they're never going to get the multiples that they got before with cable fees. I mean, they got some built in for a couple of years here, but those kind of like, you know, 20% compounded interest that they had for like 7 years, that's not going to happen again. So come on, we've been talking about that long enough. Second thing is, I think that Bob Iger is a planning guy for the future. He's interested in succession, which might sound ironic now that Tom's not there and you don't know if there's anybody inside the company that could take his job. But I think that there's always been some concern from Burbank and other places about John Skipper's successor. And if you think about, I guess it's been since 1983 that the successor the president did not come from the inside, right? So Roger Warner was inside, then Steve Bornstein was inside, then George Budenheimer was inside, and then, of course, Skipper was inside. So the question is of, you know, at ESPN right now, is there someone that, you know, God forbid, if John Skipper got hit by a bus, could take his job? I think that's a concern of Burbank's. And, you know, so they'll probably, you know, Iger Stain will probably, that will, you'll see more focus on that, particularly since, let's see, this is, Skipper's deal is up, you know, I believe in, you know, like 15 months or something, summer of 18, I believe. So there'll be some attention paid to that. And then the third thing is in terms of like getting ready for this amazing marketplace that's going to start in 2020. I mean, in 2017, this year, there'll be another round of Thursday Night Football, but you got, I mean, you're going to have NHL, NFL, golf, Big Ten. I mean, between 20 and 22, you know, there's a bunch of things. NBA doesn't start again until 24, I think. But there's a bunch of stuff coming out, including baseball. I think that's 21. But my only point is, is ESPN going to be able to afford it all, like they as much as they have now? Maybe not. And if that's the case, then you got to do triage, and you start with the fact that the NFL is ESPN's crack cocaine. They got to get in there. They got to keep the NFL. But at the same time, they're paying way more than anybody else right now, and they have the fourth worst schedule. So how patient are they going to be about that? And, you know, is all of a sudden, you know, Google, Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, any of those places going to start, you know, bidding in different ways that's going to raise the ante. So, like, this is a really, really important time for ESPN. They have to literally plan out their next several years, because their next several years, I think, is going to determine the entire next decade for the network.
All right, let's take a break from Jim Miller, business guy. We'll pay some bills and be right back. All right, this is a question I pretty much know the answer to, but I'm going to ask you guys anyway. Do you like Major League Baseball? Do you like watching Major League Baseball? Of course you do. I know you do. And, you know, whether you're a Cubs fan or a Mets fan, Yankees fan, Mariners fan, I'm actually pretty psyched about baseball this year. With the Cubs winning, one, it sets up an interesting possibility. Is the team built to repeat, which I think clearly is? And two, what are some of the other teams out there, whether it's the Red Sox, Blue Jays, Cardinals, Nationals, what are the other teams? And the Indians, of course, who could significantly make a run to knock them off. I'm pretty excited about baseball this year. I think the races are going to be really, really good. And the Cubs should be great. And it's just when the Cubs are great, I think baseball is great. And if you're a baseball fan, well, then you need T-Mobile, because they're giving away a free year of MLB.TV Premium. That's a $112.99 value, absolutely free, and only for T-Mobile customers. Here's the best part. With T-Mobile One, unlimited data means unlimited baseball. That means you can catch our old friend, Brian Anderson, a former guest on the Sports Illustrated Media podcast, now doing Milwaukee Brewers games. If the Brewers aren't your favorite, let's say it's the Cubs, you can keep up with your favorite team from almost anywhere. Every pitch, every big moment, every walk-off home run, all without worrying about blowing up your phone bill. Stream, post, and share all things MLB. Speaking of walk-off homers, I'd look for Edwin Encarnacion to have a huge year for the Indians. All that sound good? Here's how you get it. First, get T-Mobile. Second, download the T-Mobile Tuesdays app from the App Store. Third, and this is important, on April 4th, get your free year of MLB.TV Premium in the T-Mobile Tuesdays app. That's it. Now just relax and enjoy any out-of-market games, plus unlimited stats, highlights, and more from almost anywhere. Again, one more time. Remember, on April 4th, get your free year of MLB.TV Premium through the T-Mobile Tuesdays app or go to T-Mobile.com/MLB. Top 3% of data users may notice reduced speeds. Activate HD feature, otherwise video typically streams at 480p. Web-enabled mobile device and qualifying service required. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. Blackouts and other restrictions apply. See terms of use for details. All right, back with Jim Miller. All right, Jim, I appreciate that. That was interesting. I don't really have much to add on Iger because you're sourced better than that and much closer to me. So I want to move on to Bill Simmons, who is someone you have written about extensively, certainly with the Grantland stuff. He was part of your book. As many of my readers said, you've been pumping him up for decades. So you're certainly a guy who can talk about him. Where do you, we're now post HBO with Simmons. He's now
well, no,
right.
He's still there.
No, but I'm saying post his HBO show. He's still there.
HBO show. Okay.
Yeah, I should be specific. You're correct about that. And actually just announced the Andre the Giant doc, which I think could be great. He's now writing more for The Ringer. And certainly continuing his podcast, Dynasty. Where do you see Simmons right now, just in terms of sort of the post-HBO show being dropped and him getting back into more writing?
Well, first of all, I think even he might agree. I don't know, but he certainly, it's what he does best. And it's what was... It was the oxygen for his tremendous growth when, you know, starting in Boston and doing all he's done in the past decade. I think that it's probably in some ways disappointing for him given how the show turned out. In some ways, it's probably liberating.
Right.
And I think that Bill is smart enough. I wouldn't go so far as to say that, you know, I'm a Simmons defender because God knows there have been times when he thought that that wasn't the case. But my only point is I think that one of the things that I think he came away from with HBO is, you know, he learned a lot. And when you're on your own, he's very entrepreneurial now. He's got his own gig. And when you're on your own, sometimes the lessons that you learn are going to be, you know, much more valuable than if you're at some company where you may not see it as clearly, or it can get hidden because there's so much other stuff going on.
I'm trying to think, do I want to continue on Simmons or not? No, I don't, actually. I want to move on to some other stuff. And let's start with a very close friend of Bill Simmons, at least professionally, and that would be Katie Nolan. This moves us into Fox Sports 1. Jim, and you're tight. Listen, I know when you are in California, you and Nick Khan and Jamie Horowitz go out to some fancy restaurant together and share stories.
For the record, that's never happened. That's all right. We're living in a post-truth society, so keep it going. Go ahead.
I was told by one of the websites that is true.
Was it Breitbart?
No, Breitbart has actually some facts on it. There's some more crazier.
I know. I was kidding.
Some websites. All right, but in all seriousness, her deal's coming up soon. I don't know exactly when, but it's in the next 13 months. Jamie Horowitz, your buddy, who is the head of Fox Sports 1 and Fox Sports 2 networks, as well as their digital properties.
Vladimir Putin, your buddy.
Has said clearly that he wants her to have a bigger role at Fox Sports 1. We haven't seen that yet. So let's just, as our way into Fox Sports 1, what do you see with her in the next 12 to 24 months? You think she stays with Fox Sports 1, heads someplace else? Is there bandwidth for her to... do what she does on a network that has clearly made the, you know, the philosophical decision to essentially sort of go all opinion all the time from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m.?
You know, I was on a United flight the other day, and she does this gig for United.
Wow.
Where she explains their baggage handling system.
Nice cash.
And I'm, like, looking across the aisle, and there's, like, four middle-aged white guys who aren't even wearing headphones, who are staring at the screen in the back of the seat in front of him, like, you know, it's unbelievable. I mean, she is she's a real talent, and I think she knows it. I think, you know, FS1 knows it, and so I would expect that if she does stay, they're going to have to come up with not only something that's more than what she's doing now. They're going to have to come up with more money. And so it's probably one of those things where, you know, you test the marketplace. It's really important for, you know, this whole idea about testing the marketplace isn't just about dollars and cents sometimes.
Right.
It's about other opportunities, right? I mean, because you look at Tirico. I mean, Tirico could have stated ESPN. They wanted him. He wanted to do other things. She may want to do other things. She may not even know what she can do elsewhere. So the idea of having these conversations becomes really important. And I think that, you know, talent like her, where, you know, you've got a lot of runway in front of you, I think it's a, you know, it's an important thing to do. Jamie Horowitz is, you know, pretty savvy, though, so I would guess that he's going to come up with a way to preempt as much of that as possible. I mean, the easiest way is to, you know, expand it to an hour and give her some presence on other, you know, other platforms and other events. But they have to, this is all about creating a narrative for talent. This is about saying, look, we want to, you know, remain your home, and this is what we can put together for you. And then you got to maybe even go beyond that and start to look at some of the marriages that they can make within their Murdoch empire.
Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but here's the sort of the twofold interesting problem for me there. One, and again, I like Katie. I think she's talented, but her show did not draw over the air viewership at all. So if you're Horowitz and company, you do have to ask yourself, if we put her in a better time slot, will that change? And then secondly, Jim, and this is the important thing, there's nothing on that network that's drawing big numbers except live sports. So if you're on the Katie Nolan side, even if you're making a ton of money, is that the right place, is that the right venue for you to be on a network where its identity is always going to be around guys like Bayless and Coward? So even if it's big money, do you want to be in a network that's not really being seen?
Yeah, no, listen, it's an interesting question. I mean, I think that what the FS1 people will tell you is we need more time. It hasn't been long enough, and they have a growth story in their numbers in terms of, you know, not looking at the actual numbers, but just the percentage increases, and they hope that continues. What's real clear is Horowitz has got a lot of flexibility. I mean, they just, you know, a couple months ago, they canceled the show that they had used the Super Bowl to promote.
Right.
I mean, they sent two popular guys back to Canada. I mean, that's like that shows a lot of a lot of ability to set the ground rules and to, you know, to make it what he wants it to be. So at least he can say to her, look, I'm in control of this thing, so don't worry. I'm in control of it, and I think you're great, so don't go someplace where you might be in, you know, different hands. It'll be very interesting to see. But I do think sometimes there is a history in the business of people who may not have started at a, you know, not everybody becomes an instant hit or has a hit, and then, you know, sometimes you gotta grow the story,
right?
And that's what they may be thinking about her.
I'm not sure I've ever asked you about this, but what are your thoughts on Barstool? And you don't have to take it from a content play, because you know I'm not sure they're trying to appeal to you per se. But they've become immensely popular in a number of metrics, particularly the podcast space. Part of my take is about consistently the number one sports in number one on the iTunes list of sports in rec. They now have their own radio show on Sirius XM. They had the spot on Comedy Central for a week. They've got money from the Churning Group that's come in. They have a CEO who's fantastic. and is part of the corporate world. So I understand the complaints about them, but if Jim, you're very good when it comes to sort of the business of media. What do you think of them as a media play right now, and where can they go?
I mean, listen, I just think it's been a fascinating case study because we know some places that have, you know, burned out or grew too fast or decided to make some decisions with their content that wound up being a mess. But I mean, this has been interesting to watch. And I think that it's interesting to watch not only in terms of their growth, but in terms of when you think about it, it shows that you don't have to be some giant entity to be successful. You know, I mean, the nature of the world right now is such that you get like, you know, three or four friends together in a room and you have a good idea. You're willing to work your ass off. I mean, some of the barriers are pretty low to entry.
Right.
And so I think that, you know, if nothing else, you can quibble about the content or whatever. But I mean, some people do. But I think it's been an amazing ride so far. And the way that they've handled themselves, I think it shows that there is probably, you know, more to come.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see if Barstool ever partners with your traditional sports places like ESPN or Fox. I'm still not sure that those places would jump, but
you know, again, we'll see. You know, it's like when Bleacher Report went over to Time Warner. Like, how many? So you guys have Turner, you have Bleacher Report, you have SI. There's like a lot of different brands that are associated.
Well, not anymore. Now SI is now because SI is now Time Inc. and Bleacher and Turner are Time Warner. We are separated. We used to be connected with them, but we're not anymore.
No, I understand in terms of, you know, ledgers and everything else, but I'm just talking about in terms of brands and associations and how people. It's just, it's interesting to see whether or not, it'd be interesting to think about whether or not Barstool even wants to do that.
They might not. They might not want to sort of be with a sort of an old media kind of place.
You got to start answering to somebody else. You got to
right.
start competing with.
Well, yeah, they'll always be independent. You know, I didn't ask you about ESPN. We should get to this because this is something that you reported first, and that is Sam Ponder is now the Sunday NFL Countdown host. Berman's other responsibilities: Trey Wingo gets day one of the draft. Susie Colbert gets some extended work on Monday Night Countdown, although she was doing that. But the real big sort of move with Berman leaving the NFL stage is Samantha Ponder taking over for Berman on that show. Today, as we're taping this, or yesterday, I should say, we're taping this on March 27th. My column on March 26th was a long Q&A with Sam Ponder.
I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, she gave some really thoughtful answers. But you obviously, Jim, were sourced on this. You knew this was going to happen. And so, from your end, why was management confident that Sam Ponder, who has no experience in the NFL, could morph over to, you can make the argument, their most important studio show behind College Game Day? Monday Night Countdown draws better ratings, but I think historically, the Sunday NFL Countdown show for them obviously is so important given how it helped build the brand.
Right. Well, it starts with the line that you had in your introduction to your column, which is, I think with John Skipper, there was just no way that, I know some people thought Trey Wingo was going to get it. I think that John has been very, very committed to diversity and to expanding the roles of females. That's not to say that this was a token gesture or anything like that, but I'm just saying if you were gaming this out, you know, 3-4 months ago, you know, a bunch of us, we always thought that, you know, people like Sam Ponder and Susie would have a inside track, you know, and I think that proved to be the case. Look, they obviously have a lot of faith in her, and she's equipped herself really well. I think people are going to be struck about, you know, obviously it's totally going to be a totally different show than it was with Berman. And it should be. I mean, she said it in your column. I mean, the smartest move she can make is not trying to do the Berman show. And I think that that is going to be interesting for the viewer. And I think it's going to also be interesting on Park Avenue because Chris Berman was a loyal subject
right.
to the National Football League. I think that if you were to put together a sizzle reel of times when he's criticized the league, it would not be a long
one. Be a short reel.
you would not need a lot of editing time.
Yeah, the one thing, I mean, listen, I've been very honest with this in print. I mean, to me, Berman was an enabler of the NFL. He was a PR apparatus. At the same time, listen, that's going to get you in the NFL's great circles. He's going to be in their Hall of Fame. He obviously, him and Tom Jackson, what they did was revolutionary. Never not give him credit for that. But it's just not, he was not a guy who ever used his platform to be critical. Do you think Sam Ponder...
Once with primetime.
Right. Do you think Sam Ponder... I from everything that I've heard, Jim, and maybe you've heard the same thing, is they really want this current show to be Randy Moss, Charles Woodson, Matt Hasselbeck-centric. And so while she will obviously be the host of it, I think they want it to be as much about the analysts this particular year to give her some time to get entry into the NFL, as opposed to Berman, even though he wasn't commenting per se, his personality kind of dominated that show.
Yeah, I think that's going to be one of the interesting... Look, it may change over time, but for this coming fall, I think it'll be interesting to see like what her percentage of airtime is, whether or not she's just feeding questions or if she's really getting involved in the discussions, doing her own analysis, giving her own opinions, and both about what happens on the field and also what's going on with the league. That'll be a huge game changer if she, as we were just talking about before, if she starts to say something about, an event or something that takes place where, you know, she disagrees with how the league handled it. That is just nothing that we've seen, in the Berman era.
Yep.
So I think that'll be interesting. But look, I think they were smart. They divided it up. It was I kind of disagree with you a little bit. I thought it was a little clunky the way they did it.
Really? You know, how so? I'm interested in that. That's interesting to me.
I mean, look, I mean, I have friends at ESPN and friends at NBC and stuff like that. But if I'm ready, I think it's cleaner. Like, all of a sudden Costas announces he's stepping away from the Olympics, and that day, it announced that Tirico's taken over.
Right.
I think it's, it was the only reason, it was very hard from the time that Berman kind of let it be known that he had seen the writing on the wall and that he basically had no, that his responsibilities were going to be cut back. To the time that they announced Sam, Susie, and Trey, there was a lot of instability. I think the process was, there was a lot of rumors, there was a lot of, and I know, Freud said definition of maturity is the ability to handle ambiguity, but I still think, though, that it put a strain on the company in a way that, 'cause it wasn't a surprise. I mean, last year I wrote something about this, Berman's got one more year, and people were on my case saying, that's really not going to happen. That wasn't the case. And it did prove to be the case. And I think that there could have been a little bit better planning, because there was a lot of uncertainty and a lot of people, the process was a little screwed up too inside.
That's interesting. I'm going to obviously stick by what I wrote, and the Costas Tirico thing could not have gone better, but that could have been. Listen, there were not as many that Berman thing could have been really ugly. You could have had Berman or his camp leaking stuff. It didn't seem to get at least so negative in the press, and that, as you know, Jim, that's a hard one, man. I mean, that's a 30-year guy, and that's hard. That's hard people to remove basically from shows.
Let's put it this way: this is one of the times when ESPN did a pretty good job, and you have to credit Berman in this as well.
I do.
Of making it seem that it was all good.
Oh, so you're saying I got played, Jim, you're saying.
No, you didn't get played at all, but I think you only heard what you heard, which I don't think you got played, but I think that, several people sucked it up big time. I think it's easy to say, oh, no, we were all happy. You're wrong, Miller, but... trust me, there was several people, that were not fine with this.
All right, let's finish up with some questions for you, and you got so many of them, I can't get to all of them, but we'll get to a couple. What is Dan Patrick's future at NBC Sports, in your opinion?
Dan is up, I think, next year, at the beginning of next year. He's got the number one show on television. So,
like more than Walking Dead, you're saying?
No. Well,
sports TV.
It's sports.
The simulcast.
Right. That Sunday. No, the Sunday Night Football.
Oh, the Sunday Night Football.
Yeah, I mean,
I thought you were giving praise because you're always a frequent guest on that show. I thought you were spinning me.
Look, I like Dan. I like Dan a lot.
Very super talented guy.
He's got I think his contract's up next year, and you know, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, he's got this. You know, he's got his own show, which I know he loves, and that doesn't seem to be going away. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But I mean, he's not just given Football Night in America and its prominence on the schedule leading into the number one show. It's not an insignificant thing to wonder about.
I think he's in a great. I mean, listen, it seems clear that NBC likes his work, and he's in a good spot. So I feel like if he wants to continue to work, why change it up?
Yeah, it makes sense to me. I mean, you know, he may have other ideas or, you know, NBC, I don't know. But he certainly has proven that the people at the end of his career at ESPN who said, you know, you're finished, he couldn't have proved them more wrong.
Absolutely. Is there anything you want to discuss about CAA and the WME? Is there a potential battle coming in 2017?
You know what? I actually think that they're pursuing such vastly different strategies. It's kind of interesting. I mean, you know, I think a quarter of WME's business now is the old entertainment traditional business. I mean, they have UFC, obviously, they have IMG, they have all these partnerships with foreign money, and they're so highly diversified. ESPN is expanding, CAA is expanding as well, but I think that they're really not pursuing the same strategy as a company as whole. I mean, when they're fighting for directing clients or star clients or something like that, yes, but that's less and less relevant today. So, I mean, both places are, you know, very, very successful, and some, you know, really, really competitive people running both places.
This is right on the news. How sensitive do you believe? I'm almost laughing at this question because I have my own thoughts. How sensitive is ESPN management to internal criticism of content? For instance, other ESPN personalities criticizing First Take's decision to continue to give LeVar Ball multiple airtime.
Yeah, so this is kind of like a pretty big thing throughout the years in ESPN, right? Because the whole idea, it was like Reagan's commandment about Republicans, thou shalt not criticize another Republican.
Yeah, good line, right? Yeah.
Tony Kornheiser got suspended when he went after Anna Storm. Right. He goes after a lot of people, but because he went after a colleague, he got suspended.
But that was, I mean, to be fair, as you know, and you reported this in your book, that was Tony Kornheiser skidding along the line of sexism with his take. That's part of the reason he got suspended. It wasn't just Hannah Storm sucks. It was Hannah Storm is dressing like a, what'd he say exactly? If you remember the.
I think the word sausage was in there, but that's.
Yeah, whatever. Right.
I understand, but my only point is, in answer to your question, ESPN does not like it when, you know, there's a circle in firing squad.
Right.
You're not supposed to do that. At the same time, I think that the nature and the notion of what they're doing nowadays with more of this commentary and more freedom given to people like Jamel to talk about politics and everything else, it can't be like white gloves all the time. It should. I mean, you don't want people saying anything personally antagonistic, but I personally think if somebody's on a show at ESPN and they're having a hard time of dealing with what, you know, First Take may be doing or some other show, there's a way to say it where you get some active debate.
Well, Lebatard's been always very good at criticizing his own network under the framework of his show. I don't think he's as rebellious as he thinks he is, but there's value always in being an internal critic. You would agree. You can't push it to the point where you're Kornheiser, but you can push it to at least a little bit of an extent to show that you're a little bit of a rebel within the larger corporate structure.
I think it shows two things. One is it shows that you're, you know, rebel. And second of all,
shows you got a good contract.
But it shows that the place is big enough, and they're not trying to be like you know, the Kremlin in terms of you can't criticize anything. It's just a fine line to walk.
I mean, yes, it is a fine line to walk. But as you know, I like it. I like it because
I think it's good for business.
I think it's good for business too. Interestingly enough, Vince McMahon would say it's good for business. But I think also there are just times where, like, man, you just got to say something. You can't always be sort of sheep if your company's doing something ridiculous. Now, that said, I don't think LeVar Ball is the bridge to die on. I mean, this is just, you know, this is like a one-man hype machine for his kid. He's amusing enough. They've done far more nonsensical stuff than this. Somebody asked, what is the subject of your next book? Will it be the CIA or the FBI? Because you love three-letter... Well, you actually don't love three-letter organizations. ESPN's four. You love letter organizations, I guess, would be the thing.
I'm dating the idea, and I hope to soon marry it.
All right. We'll think about... We'll think about that. Let me see what else I have here.
I really would like to tell you the truth. The one that I really would love to do.
This is a book you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
One day. I mean, I actually, it's not a lot of big famous names and popular names, but I would love to try and do the Vatican.
Wow. How on earth do you get access to that?
If I could get to, you know, sit down and get Pope Francis to cooperate, to go inside and to do an oral history of the Vatican and to talk with, you know, people that have been, you may not know their names, but I think that's a world that would be just incredibly interesting to me in terms of doing an oral history.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. That'd be an incredible book. I just don't know how you could get... the access you ultimately would need, but that would be...
Well, I think a Jew from Brooklyn is the only way to go with it.
You would have to, as you know, you would have to take permanent residence in Rome to do that.
And the bad part is?
There's no bad part. That's the point. It'd be great, especially if someone else is paying for it. All right, listen, we're an hour in. There's probably so much more to cover, but I'm not going to... is there anything you want to say about ESPN PR or Fox Sports PR?
I like to... No.
Can we trash them before on our way out? By the way, you know how many ESPN declines comments I've gotten this year? I think I've gotten like five. And I've also noticed that there's a little bit more in the marketplace this year. So I told Soltis, LaPlaca, Krulowitz, et cetera, that I may count it for the year 2017. What would be... We'll end this on this. If you're an organization like ESPN, what should be the limit of we decline comment on this story for per year?
What should we do? An over under?
You should only get like, what do you think? An over under like 10? You can't get more than 10 for the year, right?
I would say a dozen.
A dozen, but because you're a company that has employees that like Adam Schefter calls up people every day for comment. So if you're employing all these people, I think you got to limit your declines comment.
Well, I go through that all the time with them about salaries because they're on TV every day saying,
correct,
so just signed this deal and this coach made this deal and this one.
Great point.
And then all of a sudden, you know,
you'll tweet something out. It freaks them out. Exactly.
Yeah, they get pretty upset. So, I mean, I would, it would be fun to do an over under 12. I mean, the only problem is that when you're going through some of the stuff that they're going through, you know, I mean, I think that Chris and his team, Chris LaPlaca and his team, try and talk about bad times as well as good times, but some of these things they don't have answers to, Rich.
No, I agree. Listen, and I will say that, again, as a general rule, they're very good about getting back to you when it could be negative for them. They may decline, but they'll always get back to you, and that is something that I consider professional and respect of nothing else. You know what, Jim, it's interesting that you say that, because we're all kind of hypocrites in this, especially those who really cover athletes on a day-to-day basis, in that we talk so much about athlete salaries and franchise values and stuff, but so many people would be horrified if their salary was, you know, printed on an athlete's feed or something like that. It's interesting. It's the media, in that sense, is kind of a hypocritical body, in that if it's truly transparent, everybody's salary should be out there if you're reporting on athlete salaries.
Right. I mean, and it's funny because it's somewhat unique to, Wall Street, all the salaries are so big, it doesn't matter. And in Washington, it's all about power, not money, and you know what everybody makes. Supreme Court justice, the senator, the president, whatever, at least on his job. But sports is this weird kind of world where, you know, money is, you know, it's very intoxicating, and there's wide ranges of it. And, you know, what happens also is a couple times I reported a salary of an ESPN employee, and then I was told that, you know, like there was a, you know, like some of the talent people at ESPN got like 5 phone calls in the next hour from agents saying, wait a second, if you're paying so-and-so this much, and I didn't do it to be disruptive, but it there is kind of a, because not a lot of people know what other people are making, it is a kind of a, it's just a weird X factor.
Yeah, and journalism is weird in that, you know, you go in, I think so many people go into the business not for, and certainly not for salary, but sometimes like you can end up really hitting it big for, I mean, crazy salary or more salary than you expect. I just even think of my own graduates or my own classmates from Columbia's journalism school and like what some of us are doing now. We could not have imagined we'd be doing that at certain salaries. Then there are others who made, you know, just incredible money. And then there are others who make no money, but they're reporting in conflict regions and really doing incredible work. It's the profession is interesting in that way because, at least from most of the people that I've met, money is not close to a motivating factor, although some have ended up making an inordinate amount of money.
Well, my friends in business school, sometimes it was
totally
just the only way
world.
To keep score.
Yeah, but that's you. Your background is different because I would think everybody, or not, I shouldn't stereotype, but the majority of the people you went to, or you went who were colleagues of yours in business school had to be motivated at some point by finances.
I think that's true.
Right. Where at Columbia, I think they're motivated by, I don't even know if ideology is the right word, but something. So it's creativity or something like that. Anyway, I don't know how we got on the subject. Is there anything else that you want to promote or add before we get out of here?
No, good, man. But it's been fun. Thank you for
having
me.
Has it honestly been fun? Because you've been on the Simmons podcast and the Dan Patrick podcast, and you say the same thing to them. You're like, this is great. I mean, this is, you know, not many people, I mean, compared to those entities, you realize so few people are going to hear this. This is not as, you know, Simmons podcast does like 500,000 views or whatever he does, 400,000.
I'm not a, anyone who sees me on Twitter, I'm not about following metrics. I don't tweet enough to
this podcast is like Ocean Drive. We have a very high net worth and we got a lot of high demos, but I can't give you, I'm not sure I can give you scale, you know?
I think I'm fine.
All right. Jim Miller, James Andrew Miller has been the guest. You know his books on both CAA and the ESPN book. He writes for Vanity Fair as well. And is there anything?
Not to quibble, but there's a little one on SNL too. Cause
oh, the SNL book. How can I forget
that? It's having a good year, and
might even be your best book, actually. I apologize for that. Is there anything? And you know what? We never get to talk about SNL whenever I have you on. We'll do a separate one. So is there anything you out there? There's really nothing you want to promote, huh?
Well, listen, I think that, you know, Melissa McCarthy is going to be hosting SNL coming up in a couple of weeks, and she is, you know, one terrific talent. And it's going to be a terrific night.
That's it? Are you profiling her, or are you just you're just promoting Saturday Night Live?
I love Saturday Night Live. It's having a great year. I'm happy for them.
You're like Lorne Michaels. All right. James Andrew Miller has been the guest. Thank you very much, Jim.
Thanks.
All right, back in the studio, my thanks to James Andrew Miller, who I know for a long time, and it's always great to talk sports media with him. He, again, like I said, I don't think anybody better sourced at ESPN. He talks to clearly a ton of management people and talent as well, so it was very interesting, just sort of his thoughts on what the future could potentially hold, how these upcoming layoffs will impact that company, and, you know, from my reporting, that's going to end in June, so all this movement's going to happen fairly quick. Wishing the best for a lot of people at that place. Want to thank Lou Pellegrino, my producer for this podcast. Thank you very much to T-Mobile for sponsoring the Sports Illustrated Media podcast. If you want to check out our previous podcast, please do. Last one before this, Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer, the premier wrestling journalist out there. Seth Greenberg of ESPN, Brian Anderson of Turner Sports, Laura Gentile, who heads up ESPNW, ESPN's Jim Trotter, Conrad Thompson, the wrestling podcaster extraordinaire, and Jamie Little and Shannon Spake both work for Fox with long coverage in NASCAR. So that's the last grouping of podcasts. Hope you check them out. Hope you enjoyed them. My thanks to everybody at Digital Media. Thanks to everybody at Sports Illustrated who supports these podcasts. This is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
This has been a Digital Media production. Find your voice. Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.